Hello, everyone. Welcome to our series, Taking Care of the Caregiver. I'm your hostess, Batya Lampel. Today, Arielle Schultz is our presenter, and the title of her seminar is Building Personal Resilience Through Mindfulness. Arielle has been a psychotherapist in Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Arizona for more than 20 years. She's had a thriving private practice since 2000 in the Phoenix, Arizona area, serving children, adolescents, and adults in individual, family, and couple sessions. She has also run groups on various topics such as codependency, adolescent substance abuse, parenting, and self-esteem for adolescent girls. Arielle's practice focuses on assisting her clients with a reduction of stress by teaching them refilling techniques such as EFT, meditation, mindfulness, parenting / behavioral coaching, and cognitive behavioral therapy. She has started to conduct workshops that focus on the mind, body, and soul connection, to help people have a deeper understanding about themselves and their purpose in order to help them reach their highest potential. Based on the title of Arielle's workshops, Building Resilience, Be Aware or Beware, her ultimate goal is to help people get out of the insanity loop, aptly described as doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Many of her ideas and information about her workshops can be found on her blog at http://themagiccouch.com. If you have a question, please feel free to ask it at any time during the call after the first 10 minutes. You can let us know you have a question by pressing 5-star on your telephone keypad. You might write that down now because some have told us they couldn't remember what to type in when they wanted to raise their hand, figuratively speaking. Again, that's 5-star. And at the end of 10 minutes approximately, I'll let you know that you can go ahead and ask questions, and I'll remind you about the 5-star. Well, I welcome all of you that are here. Right now, I'm excited to hear what Arielle is ready to share with us. Welcome,
well, thank you so much for having me, Batya, and welcome everybody that's joined us so far. I'm really impressed with the presenters you've had already at this telesummit, and I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak about this topic on resilience, because I think it's really an important topic, and hopefully everybody in the audience can benefit from learning how to build on their strengths to master life's challenges. So why is developing and utilizing personal resilience so important to us? Although we all face difficult life experiences that are often out of our control, I think the key to helping us overcome our external conditions is to kind of find an inner peace that is unshakable. So I have been a psychotherapist, as you know, for 20 years, and I've learned that combining the practice of cognitive behavioral therapy and mindfulness is the best approach to healing, recovering, and developing a sense of individual resilience that I think is necessary to overcome our most trying circumstances and to kind of deal with our interpersonal relationships that are difficult. So we define mindfulness as paying attention to something in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, non-judgmentally. And so research has shown that mindfulness practices such as using meditation, body scanning, and breathing techniques have been linked to an overall improvement of our psychological well-being, including things like feeling less stressed, anxious, and depressed, and in general more joyful, inspired, grateful, hopeful, and a general sense of being satisfied with life. So as you said, you know, the be aware or beware mantra that I came up with is focusing on the importance of us deciding to live more consciously. And so the first step to building individual resilience, I think, is to take a personal inventory to become more aware of where you need to make changes and learn to value and nurture yourself kind of more effectively. So my focus as a psychotherapist and life and wellness coach is to help my clients overcome such challenges as parenting difficult children and setting healthier, clearer boundaries in our most difficult relationships. So my goal in this presentation, and hopefully our work together, is to help you improve on your personal strengths by providing tools, assignments, and strategic planning to help you break unhealthy habit patterns and to help you listen to your inner guidance system. As you become more aligned with who you truly are, you will find things will come easier to you. And your relationships with others, I think, will improve. So you'll learn to be a master of overcoming life's challenges. And one of those quotes illustrating this is a Zen theory of change quote. And it is, I change not from being something other than what I am. I change by being fully aware of how I am. So the following information that I'm going to go over is an accumulation of some of the tools, techniques, and concepts of the best material I've gathered over the last 20 years of my career as a psychotherapist. And I currently use a lot of this information with my clients. It's also information that I've used for my own personal journey to help myself heal from past traumas, to build my own personal resilience, and to ultimately find some inner peace and joy in my life. So I often tell my clients I do not try to teach them anything I have not worked on implementing in my own life, and I understand the perseverance that it takes to master a lot of these difficult situations, even if I've not been through their exact experiences. So defining resilience, basically it's the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties. It's a toughness. Hera Estroff-Morano wrote in her article from Psychology Today, entitled The Art of Resilience, that, quote, at the heart of resilience is a belief in oneself, yet also a belief in something larger than oneself. Resilient people do not let adversity define them. They find resilience by moving towards a goal beyond themselves, transcending pain and grief by perceiving bad times as a temporary state of mind. So resilience to me is a primary component of being able to promote happiness and a sense of health and well-being in general. So in looking at five characteristics that resilient people share, and I'm going to expand on these further later in the presentation, but the first component that resilient people share or characteristic is the ability to know how to have internal locus of control versus external. So what this means is it's basically focusing on what we can control rather than things outside of our control. The second characteristic is being able to have emotional self-awareness and self-regulation. This is the ability to be aware of our feelings and to learn to manage to control them under pressure. And the third characteristic that a lot of resilient people have is to be able to practice healthy self-care habits. This is when people maintain a menu of different habits and distractions that help them for physical, emotional, and maintaining that balance between the physical, emotional, and spiritual, including exercise, eating healthy, getting good rest, and other activities such as, you know, maybe journaling, breathing exercises, things like that. The fourth characteristic is to practice spiritual and or mindfulness techniques such as meditation, prayer, living in the moment, using a compassionate and forgiving approach towards yourself and others, having faith in oneself and the divine order and the universal flow, and focusing on acceptance and gratitude towards people and the universe. The fifth is maintaining healthy boundaries. So being able to keep clear and consistent boundaries from others to avoid losing your sense of self is a very important component to maintaining your resilience. So five more characteristics that I'm going to go over briefly that are shared by resilient people is one is having a social support. And to expand on that a little, there's a book by Viktor Frankl, and it's called Man's Search for Meaning. And in this book, he talks about his experience in World War II in a concentration camp. And he speaks about who were the survivors, who were the ones that came away and survived that very traumatic, difficult time. And it was those that had something to look forward to, a sense of meaning when they returned home. And most of them, it had to relate to their family and that they were able to, you know, have the social support that, to think about that they wanted to get back to. So that's one of the components that's important with being resilient is to surround yourself with people who are also like-minded, who you feel you can confide in and trust. The number two characteristic is an optimistic perspective, and that's the ability to reframe setbacks as opportunities and minimize comparing themselves to others. An example of this was a client of mine recently. She had breast cancer. She was diagnosed with it, and she was able to turn that experience around. She was very much a caretaker in her family, and she was able to see that as an opportunity for her to start taking care of herself for a change, and that she thought it was, you know, it was her way of recognizing that I have been doing too much for others, and now it's time for me, instead of getting into the victim mentality. The third characteristic is self-efficacy and purpose. This is our ability to sense that we are effective in the world and that we feel a sense of meaning or purpose. Often, usually, it can be having service towards others. The fourth is something called causal analysis. And basically, this breaks down to our ability to learn from our mistakes. We consider possibilities and seek solutions to problems kind of outside the box. And the fifth one is being able to have a good sense of humor. Most people that are resilient have an ability to lighten things up when things get difficult with life challenges. They don't take themselves or the world too seriously, and they use humor even to heal from past traumas. So three key areas to building resilience, which I'll be discussing even further, that I see as important, is first you want to identify and build on the strengths that you already have and kind of see where you know and can accept yourself and others. The second is identifying areas where you may need to improve by learning new tools, techniques, or skills. When you realize that your old way of thinking and your behaviors are not working anymore. The third is identifying what distorted belief systems, feelings, or behaviors can lead to us sabotaging our goals, which in turn prevents us from becoming our more authentic self. So we've all heard about the importance of the mind, body, and spirit connection. Therefore, in order to evaluate your level of resilience, it's important to determine if you do have a balance in these particular areas. As you listen to these questions, each of the categories that I'll be reading, pay attention to any of the ones that you may have answered no to, because it may be a good indicator that you need to improve in that particular area of your life to become more resilient. So the first category would be our mind. Number one, are the majority of your thoughts towards yourself and others positive or neutral rather than negative? If you answered no, that they tend to be negative, then you may need extra help with reframing situations and identifying your automatic negative thoughts, or what we can call ants, which I will discuss more later. Number two, do you have the ability to forgive others and let go of past hurts rather than hold grudges and lack compassion? If you said no, that you have difficulty with forgiving, it might be helpful for you to listen to a previous presenter on this telesummit, Anna Halub, because she's presented on forgiveness. Number three, do you focus on how you can change when you try to solve problems and conflicts? This is the idea that we are more empowered and happy when we take personal responsibility for our happiness, or do you rather focus more on what others should do to change to resolve conflicts? Number four, do you see your problems as temporary, impersonal, and solvable rather than permanent, personal, or unsolvable? If you answered no to this question, that you tend to see it as more permanent or personal, it would benefit you to read The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, because one of the agreements he speaks about is to learn the importance of not taking things so personally. Number five, are you able to lose track of time and enjoy being in the moment? rather than focusing too much on the future, which can cause anxiety, or the past, which creates depression. If you struggle in this area, the book The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle is very helpful to help you understand how to stay in the moment. Number six, do you believe in empowering and viewing life's challenges as opportunities rather than having what we call a human justice or victim perspective on life? Many of us have a why me attitude toward life, which stops us from moving beyond the problem to find possible solutions. Okay, so moving into the category now of our body, some questions to ponder and think about and see if you need some help in is number one, do you properly care for your body by making healthy nutritional choices? If you need improvement in this area, listening to Rick Molter, who presented on this topic previously on the Tele Summit, would be helpful for you. Number two, do you exercise and get plenty of sleep, rest, and relaxation? And if you want some more guidance in this area regarding meditation and breathing exercise and exercises, Kristen Stroud is a presenter that you could listen to who's already been on the Telesummit as well. Number three, do you have awareness of how situations affect you in an energetic way and what part of your body you might be leaking energy? Number four, do you set healthy and clear boundaries with others, especially unsafe, needy, or toxic people, rather than overextend yourself and feel exhausted frequently? If you struggle with this, there are several books that are helpful that I often recommend. One is Codependency No More by Melody Beattie, and there are two books that Townsend and McLeod have written, which are Boundaries and Safe People. I'll be also giving more information on that topic later. The third area is spirit or soul. Number one, do you practice refilling exercises such as meditation and or prayer and use other techniques such as scanning your body daily as well as unplugging from situations and people that tend to drain you? I will be explaining this further using information from an author of the book Anatomy of the Spirit, and her name is Carolyn Mace. Number two, after giving so much of yourself, do you know how to receive as well as give to allow for the flow of giving and receiving that is essential to nourishing your soul and others? I discuss this topic of receiving frequently with my clients, since so many of us see it as being selfish to want anything, especially those that are caretakers. I explain that receiving is giving to others, and that selfishness, in my opinion, is you not showing up completely because you haven't nourished yourself, which means other people don't get to experience the best of you. There's a book by Mary Ponder that she's written on the subject of receiving, and it's called Open Your Mind to Receive, and it's a really helpful guide to improve in this area. Number three, do you listen to your intuition and inner guidance feelings when making decisions rather than playing a conditioned role that you learned in your family of origin to please others? In other words, doing things out of habit and familiarity every day rather than really honoring yourself. Number four, do you trust the divine order or your higher power and go with the flow while paying attention to signs and synchronicities rather than always trying to control things or people you have no control over or resist things that are flowing for you? Okay, so if you want further assessment tools, there are a few websites that have specific quizzes and inventories to evaluate and build on your current strengths and to help you get to know the true you. I have posted or will be posting more of these inventories, quizzes, and books on my website, www.themagiccouch.com, and it will also be probably in the bonus section of the Telesummit website as well. But I'll go over a couple websites that are that I found that are good inventories, and the first is Al Siebert's Resiliency Center Quiz, and again, I'll have this written down or it will be posted, so if you don't get it right away, you can get it from there. And that's www.resiliencyquiz.com. The second is the Resilience Factor Inventory, the RFI, which I think is kind of one of the main ones that's done by Adaptive Learning, A-D-A-P-T-I-V, no E, learning.com. The Resilience Scale is another one, and that is the www.resiliencescale.com. So those are some different ones that you can look at. And like I said, I'll post some more online and explain what they are, and hopefully there are different categories with, you know, mind, body, and spirit that you can look at. Okay.
Ariel,
now,
I wanted to remind people that they can raise their hand or show that they have a question by pressing 5-star, and I just wanted to remind them of that. That's all.
Okay, great, thank you. Okay. So let's expand now on the shared characteristics of the resilient people that I read earlier. So I created a 5-step process to improve in the area of emotional self-awareness and regulation, which is, you know, one of the ones earlier I talked about was one of the characteristics. So the main focus of this 5-step process is to change your thoughts, to find healthier ways to respond rather than just being reacting to people, especially it's just, you know, which we know is especially difficult when you're dealing with difficult people. So the first step is to learn to develop what I call your witness, or actually this is a mindfulness term of learning to watch yourself as a third person in order to gain self-awareness regarding your emotional triggers. This will give you more time to kind of to think before you react if you see yourself in the third person and witness yourself. I also have clients review several handouts that I put as another resource on the website, and those resources will help us identify what different cognitive distortions we may have. So a few examples of cognitive distortions are, like I mentioned earlier, ANTs, which are automatic negative thoughts, are catastrophizing, denial, blaming, rationalizing, filtering, mind reading. So an example of catastrophizing might be when you say to yourself, nothing is going well and I'm failing at everything, when really you're only having trouble with one area in your life. Other handouts that I put on my blog that I use to help clients to become more aware of their triggers are called Stinking Thinking and Rational versus Irrational Thought. So the second step that I see to gaining more emotional self-awareness and regulation is to keep a daily log, which is a record basically of actual events that trigger kind of a 5 or higher emotional response on a scale of 1 to 10. So I adapted this daily log to also help you assess what irrational thoughts or cognitive distortions you have during the interaction that caused the 5 or above in emotional intensity, and what rational thoughts you could think instead of to improve your response. So, for example, instead of saying, I am stupid when something happens and you are feeling down on yourself, you would want to change that with what I did was stupid. Many of us struggle with having compassion for ourselves and beat ourselves up way too much. And so another mindfulness practice that we really all need to learn is called loving kindness toward ourselves. This includes repeating positive phrases towards ourselves and learning to believe, as Walt Whitman says, quote, I am larger and better than I thought. I did not think I held so much goodness. The third step into gaining awareness into our distorted thoughts is to go another layer deeper into what belief system supports those thoughts, which are typically ingrained messages you receive from your family or tribe. Also, how that belief system no longer serves you and how you view yourself in the world. For instance, I had a client say that she was taught by her tribe, by her family, and then she believed it, that you should never say no to your husband. When she realized that belief was no longer helpful because she began to resent him due to always putting his needs first, she recognized that was an area she needed to change in the way she was thinking about her relationship. The fourth step is to identify your reactions to others. When you are triggered, it's to list ways you can react more constructively. This process is to create change in your reactions toward others. It can be often tricky because it's our ingrained core wounds, or another way to define it is our unmet needs from childhood. And those can often trigger our lizard or monkey brain, which cause our response of fight, flight, or freeze. And there's a fourth one I learned, which is called facade, and that's when you pretend to make everything okay by smoothing it over and just kind of caretaking those around you. And often you have these triggers due to past traumas, which cause that fight, flight, or freeze reaction. So healing from those wounds is often where people do need to seek outside help, because it is difficult to process and unravel the layers and change those ingrained patterns. I often suggest a tracking exercise, too, of other times you may have felt that way, and as well as various guided meditation exercises to let go of your past hurts and to start cutting those energetic ties. I explain this in a greater detail in one of my blog entries entitled Don't Go Down the Rabbit Hole. The final and fifth step to improving your emotional awareness and your emotional regulation is to learn to decipher between what is my responsibility in the conflict or issue and what is really the other's responsibility. I love the saying, not my monkey, not my circus. And I wrote a blog entry that helped to helps with the question of whose problem and responsibility is it really when you have an issue. So many of us take on problems that aren't ours to solve, especially if we are caretaker steward types, like many of us are. So there are several books I mentioned earlier that assist us in clarifying when we need to create healthier boundaries. So I'll repeat them, and that was Boundaries and Safe People by Townsend and McLeod, Codependency No More by Melody Beattie, and there's a fourth one, which is Compelled to Control by J. Keith Miller. So as Dr. Phil says, got to quote him because this is one of my favorite things that he says, is, quote, we teach people how to treat us, which means we are responsible also for changing that dynamic. Some of our best teachers in life are those that give us our greatest challenges, because it gives us the opportunity to see where we need to step up and value ourselves more by creating a definitive line of what you will and won't accept in your life. So two other characteristics I want to go over of resilient people that were mentioned as one of the top 10 earlier is I want to expand on how we can have clearer boundaries and how we can keep the focus of attention on ourselves, which is the same as having an internal locus of control rather than an external. So one of the good places to start with that is regarding how you may need to improve your boundaries if you came from a dysfunctional family, which, you know, many of us, if you look at a continuum, probably do to one degree or another come from some dysfunction. So in these dysfunctional families, we are often prescribed roles to play in order to survive and find some stability in unstable and stressful environments. So it's helpful for us to kind of identify the role you may have been conditioned to play in your family of origin. So there's a few I'll go over. One is the hero or the golden child. This is the person who tends to be the overachiever who you know, everybody sees as being capable of doing anything, everything, and tends to be the one that they focus on as the positive. And then the mascot or the jester, that's usually the comedian of the family. The invisible or lost child is usually the one that doesn't talk much, doesn't share much, sort of stays in the corner, you don't know what's going on, and they often are avoiding the conflict or not wanting to be caught up in it. And then the third, or the last one, is scapegoat or black sheep of the family, and that's usually the rebellious person who I would call the truth sayer sometimes, who's really speaking out about what really is dysfunctional about the family, but no one really wants to hear it, so they make them the bad guy. There can also be an addict or an enabler or rescuer role, which is often the caretaker person, and that's usually played by the parents, which is present when a family member has an addiction or dependency on a substance or can be addicted to a behavior such as anger or work. So the next step to think about is what the other family members in your, when you were growing up, what other roles they may have played that I just listed. You know, what role do you and your family members maybe play in your family now potentially? It helps to identify this in order to break out of playing a role that is really not healthy for you or anyone in your family. You may have been conditioned to play the role of caretaker in your family of origin, which may have led you to play that role in your current family. And as a caretaker, you may find yourself trying to be all things to all people, and that's where it becomes a problem. And then you have nothing left for yourself. So reclaiming yourself and saying no to others is saying yes to yourself. So identifying this, it brings awareness that you may need to set boundaries with others, and it often can be challenging because if you change your scripts, then it makes it uncomfortable to those around you who are used to you playing that role because the script is no longer predictable for them. So one of the techniques that you can use is to begin to envision how would you like to respond to others and play a more healthy role for you. And it's to write down what your old story was and then visualize and write down what your new story will look like. So if you were watching a movie, for instance, how would you and the other people in your life be behaving? It is also very important to start paying attention to what tense you are using when you're speaking to others and stay in the present tense when you're referring, instead of referring to the past, which is also a mindfulness practice. If you enjoy using pictures instead of words, then sometimes people like to create what's called a vision board, and that's just a tool used to help us clarify our specific goals. So in one of my other blog entries, I wrote, it was entitled Mirror, Mirror. I described this process in more detail of changing the script in your play and how that forces others to change their script. That brings the personal responsibility back to you and empowers you to feel more in charge of your life instead of blaming others for not acting the way you need them to act for you to feel better. So also, I want you to think about learning to be okay with others not approving of your choices or being angry at you because you aren't responding in the same way they are used to. I have clients that really struggle with this because they don't like people being upset with them because they like being liked. So ultimately, if you are taking care of yourself and saying no more often, it is the other person's problem if they don't like it. We need to look at how we might be enabling others or weakening our others by always saying yes, and how feeling needed by others can be a motive as to why we never say no. So one of the ways I explain it to my clients who are struggling in their relationship is to emphasize that it's not the other person's job to change the way they're behaving in order for you to feel okay, kind of repeating what I said before, because it really only perpetuates our victim perspective if we expect and need situations or people to follow a certain script in our play that we prescribe for them in order for us to feel peaceful inside. It's also that idea that we need to have the internal locus of control rather than looking outside of ourselves for the answers to feel better. So instead of practicing loving detachment, instead we need to practice loving detachment and not being attached to an outcome, which helps us to practice finding our peace from the inside out instead of the outside in, which is a quote from Pema Chodron's book, When Things Fall Apart. Also, as Buddha says, quote, suffering is being attached to things not changing, which this also applies that we want situations or people to stay a certain way when it's going well for us to feel good. So those people who can learn to have internal locus of control and focus instead of external locus of control are more resilient, therefore, because they can live happier lives because they look inward for the answers. Okay, so a third characteristic of being resilient I want to review is based on the importance of having a spiritual and mindfulness practices. I'm going to start with explaining how important it is to look at how we are all energy, and the importance of keeping our seven energy centers, or chakras, if some of you have heard of those, balanced, which is the key to our physical health, emotional stability, and mental clarity. So I'm going to stop for a second and ask if there's anyone that has any questions, Latia. Is there anybody?
None show up so far.
Okay, none so far. Okay.
Just as a reminder, if you have a question, hit 5-star, and it will show a question mark beside your name. And then I'll be able to unmute you.
Okay, great. Okay, so getting into the seven chakras or energy or power centers that are like located up the body from our root chakra to the base, that's from the base of our spine to the crown chakra, which is at the top of our head. As we progress upward through these energy centers, we're becoming more conscious spiritual beings, and we learn more about who we are and how to maintain our power and control. So as we learn more about where we are out of balance in our chakra system, we can learn how to transform and heal ourselves. So the first chakra is known as the root chakra, and it is where our tribal database is stored. And this is focused on the messages and beliefs that we receive from our tribe or family, and it relates to how, you know, we feel, whether we feel secure in our home, or it relates to our family identity, and it's your bonding and your loyalty center. This is where your power begins, with learning how it works within your tribe, tribal connections, and your social groups, and where we are taught that the focus should be on the needs of the group, not on our own needs. Therefore, many of us believe that it is selfish to think of ourselves first, because it is programmed in us that we have to put others' needs first. So the second, or our sacral chakra, is the control power center. This chakra is our main power center because it relates to our relationship to money, sexuality, competition, and our sense of control over ourselves and others. It is where our survival instinct of fight, flight, or freeze is stored, and this is where we can access our power of resilience and perseverance by overcoming our tendency to become victims. It's about honoring ourselves or honoring others and the need to learn to forgive and honor our tribe rather than blame them for past hurts. It's also the center where your body thrives on creativity. Therefore, anytime we give away our power to others, we can struggle in the areas of finances, sexuality, or sometimes have addiction issues. The third chakra, or solar plexus, is the center of our self-esteem and self-respect. This chakra focuses on our self-esteem through our physical well-being, including our nutrition, exercise, improving our appearance, and the belief in our deservedness. It is the beginning of our journey to go inward for answers rather than looking to the physical world or our tribe for answers, because we realize that many of those messages and beliefs, like we said earlier, have failed us. So that is why many people seek therapy at this stage, because they're seeking new solutions to their issues. It's the center where we define our sense of integrity. We create our personal code of honor, and how we feel about ourselves is directly related to whether we keep our word and how we honor ourselves. So this power center flourishes with healthy boundaries, and it's important to not link our self-worth with what we do or have. The fourth, or heart chakra, is where our self-love and intuition center resides. It's the center of all the chakras, and it represents Jesus' teachings, or what some have termed Christ consciousness. It is when we begin to understand the importance of developing our unconditional love, our humanitarian love, compassion, acceptance, our joy, love, and forgiveness are all the base concepts of mindfulness as well. This chakra relates to, from a metaphysical perspective, that we all go through the crucifixion and resurrection like Jesus did, since we will all experience a betrayal of some kind, either from ourselves or others, or other situations, and it's where we are all challenged to take the transformational journey of feeling like a victim due to being abandoned and betrayed, to surrendering to the belief in the divine order. It's going through the process of letting go of needing to understand why things happen, and having the ability to let our ego and human justice belief die. It's the ability to forgive our wrongdoers, like Jesus did, and go through a resurrection of a higher consciousness, and having the belief beyond our human order or perspective, basically having faith. The fifth, or throat chakra, is our will and the gateway to the spiritual realm. This chakra continues the process of our surrendering our personal will to the divine will, as we realize that grace has more authority than the physical material world. It involves the power of our will to communicate our highest truths, to live with integrity, and to be merciful and non-judgmental of others. This chakra emphasizes the importance of living intentionally and congruently so that our heart, the fourth chakra, and the mind, the fifth chakra, are aligned so we become our highest self. The way I heard it explained was that it's as if our will, which is our fifth chakra, is the child, and the mind is the father, and the heart is the mother. And if the mother and the father are not getting along or they're at conflict, then the will, the child, is in the middle of that, and it's difficult, and they all need to be aligned for us to feel happy and be resilient. This energy center thrives, and we consciously also take back fragments of our spirit from our past traumas or from when we have judged others in the past by honoring our truth in order to live in our full power. As it's explained, basically we can often leave parts of ourselves when we have trauma from the past, and we leave those fragments behind, and we're scattered with our energy, and we need to call those parts back to us so we can fully live in the moment. The sixth or brow chakra is our wisdom or third eye center, and this chakra is about seeking the truth and having discernment, imagination, knowledge, and intuition, and I'm going to expand on intuition a little bit more later. This power center is a contact point between our human mind and our divine mind, and focuses on developing our wisdom and our intelligence in order to know who we are and to know what will help us attain our highest joy and good. It is the area where we are learning to master our internal Buddha wisdom, which teaches us that the physical world is an illusion because it really has no power over your mind unless you give it power. It is also the area that teaches us how to practice loving detachment, which again is defined as not being attached to an outcome. The seventh chakra, or crown chakra, is the highest level of spirituality. This involves grace, beauty, serenity, and oneness with all that is. It is mastering the ability to live in the present moment in order for us to hear our inner guidance and to see the signs and synchronicities of our higher power and guidance. So, for instance, I had a client. We spent a lot of our session talking about how exhausted she was because she is the main caretaker for her mother, and she helps with caring for her niece and nephew as well. When we were at the end of the session, she pushed the button on her iPhone to tell Siri to enter our next appointment on a calendar, when Siri's response was, "I have no more left to give." That was one of the synchronicities or amazing signs verifying that she needed to take better care of herself. So, as we continue to view ourselves as energetic beings, having a spiritual practice and being in tune with how we are feeling and what our body signals are telling us helps us to become more resilient and, in general, more stable. Along that line of thinking, I want to discuss further, it talks about Carolyn Mace, who is known as a medical intuitive, and this just means she's been 98% accurate in her readings of diagnosing people's medical conditions just by scanning their energy. And she calls herself a teacher of spiritual biology because she explains that in terms of how our psychology becomes our biology. She's written many books such as Anatomy of the Spirit, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can, and Sacred Contracts. In her lecture called Energy Anatomy, in several of the other books I mentioned, she describes the seven universal truths that she discovered while studying several religions and Eastern philosophies, including the Eastern Ayurvedic chakra system, the Tree of Life from the Judaic Sephiroth, and the seven sacraments from the Western Catholicism. So I refer to her, to Carolyn Mace's universal truths, because they are a great guide and supplement to recapping the meaning of chakras for helping us become more conscious, building our resilience, and understanding how we can maintain our power. Carolyn Mace says that, quote, "becoming more conscious is the capacity to take the journey to be able to see the illusions in our life and to be able to become to interpret their universal symbolic meaning instead." So she states that if we can see each stage as a challenge to develop and master the skills of these truths, then it keeps our love and biology in balance, and the rest will basically take care of itself. So the seven universal truths I'm going to go through, as I mentioned, are based on the chakras, the seven sacraments, and the tree of life are as follows. The first one is all is one, which means oneness is expanding. It means that when we hurt others, we hurt ourselves and vice versa. The second truth is honor one another. The third, honor oneself, which is essential to us maintaining our power. The fourth truth is love is divine. As I experience love, I'm transferring it to others. And the full power of this level of is unconditional love, where our divine heart wakes up and is greater than our personal agenda. I think an example of this might be that more and more children are exhibiting various autistic and other challenging disorders and coming into the world this way. And it possibly is because it's an opportunity for us to learn to be more unconditional in our giving to love, to giving love to others. The fifth truth is surrendering our personal will to the divine will and going beyond our human limitation. The sixth is seeking only the truth and having courage to see all parts of us, including our shadow side, and embracing that. The seventh and final truth is to live in the present moment and to not carry past debts into the present. Carolyn Mace expands on the sixth universal truth, which is also the sixth chakra, as an important part of gaining insight about ourselves and being more honest by developing our intuition, which she says is all part of our biology. It's not a gift. So we all have this ability, and intuition is basically the courage to be honest with myself. It's not a guarantee of feeling secure, of not being alone or staying safe. It's listening to your inner guidance system so that you are more aware of what you feel at any given moment and where you are losing your power or leaking your energy. What stops many of us from listening to our intuition is fear of what it has to say. But it is imperative to the process of living more consciously to make an effective change in the areas that you feel stuck. And this is where I came up with the be aware or beware mantra. A good way to look at fear is using the acronym for fear, F-E-A-R, false evidence or expectations appearing real, which I've added as a handout or will be online, so you can learn more about that. It is important to evaluate yourself in terms of energy flowing through you like you have circuits attached to the top of your head that are filled with life force energy. These energy circuits are attached to everything and everyone that you have ever been connected to because of either love or fear and resentment. When you have too much energy going to a negative memory from the past, you begin to take from your cell tissue because you don't have enough reserves to manage that stress from your body. And that is where illness develops, according to Carolyn Mace, and can cause malignancy. So we need to learn to unplug our circuits from those energy leaks from the past or from people that are toxic for us, because that can cause us to feel more exhausted. So to continue to learn to be more aware of the beliefs, feelings, and behaviors that can hinder or sabotage our progress, I'm going to go through, you know, a list of some things that hopefully are helpful that you can identify that you may be doing. So I mentioned earlier, having a victim mentality is counterproductive to becoming more resilient and overcoming adversity. It disempowers us from making changes that are healthy and perpetuates our cycle of blaming others or outside circumstances for the way we feel or for our lot in life. Another way we might sabotage our progress is when our core wound or unmet need from childhood creates an ingrained faulty belief system. And that can often lead to us filtering anything from the outside world and receiving it to support the beliefs that we already have. And then this may cause us to what I call manifest beliefs. And this is commonly known as self-fulfilling prophecy. So as Helen Schuckman says in A Course of Miracles, quote, You may believe that you are responsible for what you do, but not for what you think. The truth is that you are responsible for what you think because it is only at this level that you can exercise choice. What you do comes from what you think. The third way we may hinder getting the life we want is because many have not gained enough awareness or insight into what they really want to change. So their lack of clarity continues to create for them exactly what their thoughts and feelings are, more confusion and chaos in their life. In other words, if you find yourself having contradictory thoughts regarding why you're not getting what you want, it's because your doubts, fears, or lack of practice knowing yourself, often due to always putting others first, creates this uncertainty. You must also believe you deserve to have that thing you want. And your feelings, emotions, and beliefs must all be in alignment to get what you want. So if you do have worthiness issues, self-doubt, and fears that may undermine this process, and you have not yet learned to control these issues, you will undoubtedly sabotage manifesting your dreams. Finally, we often have inability to be focused on the present and or are out of touch with our emotions due to multiple distractions, including television, computers, media, social media, cell phones. All of your power is in the here and now. And when we allow ourselves to be constantly distracted from being in the moment, we will miss important signs and synchronicities and intuitions that help guide us in the right direction. Having a cluttered environment as well, due to hoarding issues or lack of organization, can also hinder our creativity. Creativity is essential for us to thrive and to feel a sense of purpose and that we are contributing to the world, which is our self-efficacy. So to recap our energy dreams, I'm going to list some of the possible beliefs or feelings you need to be aware of that could hinder your resilience. And I will also put a more comprehensive list of possible energy drains online. So here are a few. When you're trying to be all things to all people, or what I call having a superhuman complex. Guilt or shame. This is a big one that many of us struggle with, so I will be including a great article on my website about healing from guilt and shame. If you have obsessive thinking about the past or the future, caring too much about what others think of us or comparing ourselves to others, not valuing ourselves, judging ourselves or others, resentment or blame, inability to forgive ourselves or others, having a victim mentality, being unrealistic, and having unrealistic expectations of ourselves or others, and negative self-talk. Again, simplifying some of the strategies and techniques you can use to combat your energy drains and improve your ability to handle success and become more resilient would be to practice self-care habits, which was also presented by Beth Spicer in a previous telesummit presentation. I will also be posting a basic list on my website about having self-care habits. Identify areas that you are leaking energy and unplug from those areas. Keep a daily gratitude journal. Set your intentions for the day and then visualize those things happening. If you struggle with knowing what you enjoy doing, write one activity per day a month that you discovered you enjoy. As I mentioned earlier, set clear and healthy boundaries for yourself and keep a daily log of your triggers and negative thoughts to learn to neutralize them or replace them with positive mantras such as, this too shall pass, or things are always working out for me. Have a practice of clearing out the garbage and refilling with positive energy through meditation and or prayer. And finally, remember to not get discouraged if you have setbacks, because it's important to understand progress is spiral, not linear. In conclusion, I use four words in my therapy with others, and actually I had a bracelet made with those words, which are believe, accept, allow, and enjoy. They are simple reminders to me and my clients of ways to become more resilient and master our challenges. It means Believe in yourself and the divine flow. Accept where you are now, and let go of trying to control the things you cannot change. Allow yourself to receive the blessings from the universe that you deserve, and enjoy the journey along the way by staying in the present moment. So thank you so much for having me. I wish you all the best as you do your angel work here on Earth. Remember to take care of you, because you are the only you there is. I wanted to just kind of end with a quote that I really love by Cassie Cromwell. And it says, quote, "Be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have the right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be. And whatever your labors and aspirations, in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken down dreams, it's still a beautiful world." So that concludes what I have to present today. If there are any questions anyone has.
If you have any questions, remember to hit 5-star. Well, I guess not.
Do you have any, Batya?
No, I just, I've got a testimonial. I have had the privilege of going to Ariel for insights, and I've also taken her course that she's talked about, or her workshop rather, the one on Be Aware or Beware. And she shared some of the things at that workshop that she's talked about today, and we did the exercises, and I cannot tell you how powerful those exercises are. And she's talked about posting some of these handouts on her website, and also I'll post a few on the bonus page. She's going to get back in touch with me, and I'll have them on the bonus page shortly, within the next few days to a week. And again, her insights are incredible. There was something I was struggling with my whole life, and she said just the right thing, and it got in so deep I couldn't talk for a minute. I was stunned by the truthfulness of it and the release that came from that. And it's been ongoing. It was like a sense of freedom about a certain area of my life that was very painful. So, Ariel, you are brilliant in what you do. Oh, we do have a question here.
Thank you, Batya.
Yeah, I just can't say enough wonderful things. Okay, Bob has a question. So let me unmute you. Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob.
Ariel.
Hello.
Yeah, thank you very much. There was an awful lot of meat in there. It's not a question. I don't have a question. It's just a comment. You know, I'm one of the older fellows, and I tried to take notes there for quite a while and couldn't really keep up with it. But I was taken by all of what you said there, and I'll be looking in on your website for other insights. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. You're welcome, and I'll probably also post an article that, you know, write a lot of the stuff that I have written, had presented today. So that will be on the website, so you can have it already written for you, and if you miss it.
Okay, and that's the Magic Couch, huh?
Yes, that's the magiccouch.com.
Yeah, wonderful.
Thanks, Bob.
Wonderful.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. I've got a lot of that going on in my life, as you might know, and so it was very helpful, and I appreciate it very much.
Well, good. Well, thank you for listening, and I'm glad you got something out of it.
Yeah, certainly did.
Good luck with all that. Good. Thanks, Bob.
Okay,
and just so that everybody remembers, the recording of this is going to be posted, and you'll be able to listen to it. You're not going to be having to struggle if you miss some of it and couldn't get it all down. You'll be able to listen to it on your in your own speed, at your own timing, and pause it and write down notes. And so look for the recording to be posted. We'll notify you. And again, Ariel, thank you so much for your wonderful presentation. And at this point, if you'd like to share with your audience again how they may get in touch with you in the future.
Okay, great. Well, as we were saying, themagiccouch.com has a lot of the information about me, has a lot of the entry blogs of what I presented, and there's going to be more of the handouts that I refer to, and I will be posting updated information about workshops that I'm going to be giving in the future. And then also, if you're interested in any kind of life coaching, I'm going to be posting some things about that and how you can do that through the telephone or through Skyping versus coming in my office if you're not local. So that will be, and then also going through your website, Reflect, Relate, Renew, has some information as well.
Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And I want to remind all of you to not forget to mark your calendar for the next upcoming seminars. Next week, we're going to hear from Sandra Zerner. She's written a called It's Good to Be Good, and she's been a presenter at many schools for parents. She helps parents and teachers and coaches children on bullying and what to do if your child's a bully or if they're the recipient of bullying. She does coaching one-on-one, but her topic is going to be why raising a good kid makes your parenting job less stressful. And that will be a week from today at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. And her talk will help you even if your child has a behavioral problem, especially if they do. In September, we're going to be featuring Jennifer Matthews on how focusing on the present transforms loss. And she'll be delivering that September 1st at 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight. And then 2 weeks later, Sebastian Gentry will be teaching us about new frontiers in wellness through laughter wellness. And that will be delivered on September 15th at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And I was a recipient. I attended a class on laughter wellness. And I can't tell you how powerful it is. It's just great. Again, I thank all of you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the telephone.